We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim, and welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Big week in basketball. The Bears will host in men's basketball Stanford, 1 o'clock Super Bowl Sunday. The women will be hosting Stanford on Thursday night. Then they'll be on the road to Stanford on Saturday. And a little bit later on in the program, a great conversation with Nancy McDaniel, the women's golf coach at Cal, and the travails that she's had to go through to survive a bout with cancer and come out on the other end, and just a very inspirational story. So you want to make sure you stick around for that. But we're going to start, first of all, men's hoops. Marty Wilson joining us. And Marty, of course, first-year assistant here with the Bears, looking for the first conference win this week against Stanford, which is kind of what they did a year ago. They beat Stanford to get that conference win early in the season. But Marty is a Southern California guy, Pepperdine in particular, spent close to half of his life on the campus in Malibu, whether as a player, assistant coach, head coach, whatever it was, but now up here in Northern California. Marty, thanks for taking the time with us. Let's start, first of all, maybe a little bit about your background, and then we'll kind of get to the team this year. But Southern California guy, and the folks down there have to be pretty excited about the professional sports going on down there, because they got the Rams in the Super Bowl this week. The Lakers with LeBron suddenly are relevant again, and the possibility of maybe making some trades and challenging the Warriors. And they got the Dodgers that have won the National League championship the last 2 years. So as a Southern California native, this is almost like a return to the glory times when you were growing up.
It is. It is. It's exciting. Again, I don't follow many of those things real closely other than the Lakers. Mm-hmm. I don't watch a whole lot until our season is over. But it's exciting having the Rams come back and be relevant. Mm-hmm. And obviously now getting ready to fight for the Super Bowl. The Dodgers, what they've done the last few years. And again, I don't watch a whole lot of it. But growing up in SoCal, I had Dodgers, Lakers, and Rams posters. I knew everybody on each team, the names, where they were from, their jerseys, and all of that stuff. So I used to quiz my brother. We quiz each other on those things. And obviously over the years, you you kind of separate from those, but you still have them in mind throughout the year. So no, big LA fan in all those sports.
All right. So growing up, obviously, I mean, Showtime with the Lakers, with Magic, Kareem, Coop, Byron Scott, and those guys. How captivating was that team in that era of the NBA, especially for a guy like yourself, kind of in your formative years?
Well, and I'll tell you this. I went further back when I first started playing 9, 10 years old. It seemed like every day I got home from practice, a Laker game was on, Channel 9.
Yeah. Chick Hearn,
and I'm eating spaghetti. It seemed like it was a staple. But watching all of those teams with Kareem, with Norm Nixon, and as it progressed with Magic and Michael Cooper and Byron Scott and Jamal Wilkes. I mean, I can go on and on with those guys because I've watched so many games. That was the thing to do, and the team to root for as a young kid. And as I got older, watching Magic and studying him, and me being a former point guard and considered a big point guard for 6'3", not 6'9". But he was my childhood idol, and ironically, I had a chance to meet him a couple of years ago. And I always used to tell my kids, just them being around sports, and me being around sports, they're going to meet a lot of people, and we don't bug people for photos and autographs and things like that. So I happened to be at an event, Magic was there, and I wanted to take a picture with them. But I just remembered my fatherly advice. So I was texting back and forth with my kids, and my daughter said, "Dad, you're starting to sound like a little kid right now." And I ended up taking a photo with him because it was Magic only.
Yeah. I can remember when I was working in Eugene, working at a small little television station, and it was the year in which the Pac-10 tournament in basketball was held at the Forum. Okay, you remember the Forum, the great times there. That's going to actually turn into a football stadium here in another year or so. But so we go down for the Pac-12, Pac-10 tournament, and the Lakers happen to be in the area. And A.C. Green, you remember him, played at Oregon State, so we had a tie there. And Magic Johnson at Michigan State was recruited by a guy by the name of Don Munson, mm-hmm. whose son Dan is now down at Long Beach State. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had this, and it's like all they can do is tell us no. So let's see if we can go to practice and get some interviews. So, of course, who do we ask for? We ask for Michael Thompson, who had played for the Blazers, A.C. Green. Mm-hmm. All right, let's throw in Magic Johnson and, wow, let's go all the way out, Pat Riley. And sure enough, we got one-on-one interviews with all four of those guys. And Magic, tell Munson I said hi, this, that. He was so effervescent, just like you see him on TV with everybody else and Pat Riley. Couldn't have been nicer to us. So that's kind of my memory of interacting with some of those Laker teams. So were you, you had to hate the Boston Celtics, right? I mean, you had to, that rivalry was like none that we've ever seen in the NBA.
With the passion, just following all the stuff that you heard behind the scenes, the little locker rooms, the heat in the locker room. I mean, all of those different things and the fans beat LA. I felt like you were a part of it as a fan growing up. But that's what we're missing. I think in pro sports right now, there's no real rivalry because players are jumping ship and running from team to team to team. So there's no individual rivalries. All these guys know each other. They all work out together, which is fine. But there's no team rivalries because the teams change every couple of years. So but without a doubt, big Celtics hater. Until KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen, those guys went there because I like them as players, as people, and then I like Dr. Rivers as a coach. So it changed over the years.
Well, you had Paul Pierce was, of course, an LA guy, so you had a little bit of a tie there. All right, then you go off to Pepperdine, and for most of your adult life, that's where you've been, a beautiful campus down there in Malibu. Tell us how your time at Pepperdine as a player and coaching down there has kind of shaped your philosophy.
Well, I'll tell you, ironically, how I got there. My high school coach, Bob Hawking, from Simi Valley High School, was good friends with Tom Asbury and Jim Herrick. He worked a lot of their camps. They were real close. So they come down to our school, came down to our school quite a bit and spoke at camps and recruited me. So that's how I ended up there. And obviously was there for 5 years playing, injured off and on, but played on some really, really good teams, played with some really good players that had gone on and played in the NBA, and some guys that I'm really close with to this day. And then I wanted to try to play afterwards. Didn't work out. I'm not one of those guys that just hunts and tries to think, hey, I'm going to make it to the league. I'm going to take 10 years to play all over the world. Mm-hmm. I tried one time. It didn't work out. I went to a CBA camp, thought I played well, didn't work out, and said, let me start my life. And I got into coaching. And ironically, I was in the right place at the right time because Tom Asbury was the head coach who I played for my senior year, and he had a position open. And the sad thing is I was his second choice. And again, I was his starting point guard. I was his captain, but I was his second choice. That there was a guy that was a volunteer coach that was already there on staff, who was older, had been a head coach at high school. So I understood that. Ironically, he took another job. I came in and felt I did a pretty good job. And Tom's been unbelievable for me. I just spoke with him 2 or 3 days ago, and he'll be at our game in Arizona. So spent 6 years at Pepperdine. Again, coached some really good players, Doug Christie, Jeff Lear, Dana Jones, and it goes on and on and on. We had some great teams and won a lot of games. And then I moved around a little bit, went down to San Diego with Brad Holland for 2 years, went to UC Santa Barbara with Bob Williams, who's a great mentor of mine still. I spoke with him last week for 6 years, coached some good teams there, won some championships and went to the tournament. And then I needed to spread my wings a little bit and get outside the family. All of those guys that I worked for were all a part of the Herrick tree. Then I went to Utah with Ray Giacoletti. I did not know Ray very well, but we had a great year that first year. Andrew Bogut was player of the year in the country. So I was there for 4 years, and then the opportunity to go back to Pepperdine when Tom Asbury came back. But me going back as associate head coach, but knowing that I was going to eventually take over as a head coach.
You mentioned Brad Holland because I got to know Brad when he was at UCLA as a player. And I'm thinking, if they'd have had the three-point line back then in 76, 77, when he was throwing up bombs, he was one of the best pure shooters I think I've ever seen. Played for the Lakers, got a championship ring, and then dabbled into the coaching for a little while. But think of all those guys before the three-point shot and how good some of those guys were, yet we'll never know it because they never show up on those all-time lists because they didn't have the arc back then.
Yeah, I played with a guy, John Corfus, yeah. Who was about 5'10". He was listed 6 foot. He's about 5'10". Probably 90% of his shots came from beyond where the three-point line would have been. And had it been there, he would have scored a lot more points. And the record probably would still be there because he was such a great shooter. I had to try to chase him around for 2 years in practice every day, and he could stop on a dime. But it is so true. There's a lot of guys that were great shooters before that line was there that could confidently shoot the ball from there and make them. And I know Brad was one of those. And again, he was one of those guys. He wasn't a star on the Lakers, but he was a part of those teams where they were very, very good.
Well, the all-time leading scorer in Division I basketball history is Pete Maravich, and he only played 3 years, and they didn't have the three-point shot. So he might have had the record that would have stood forever. Who knows? But the records are made to be broken. Anywho, let's move forward. You become the head coach of Pepperdine. Had some good teams down there, had some success, so joined the Bears this year with Y. King Jones. Tell us the tie-in that you've had with Y. King, because he's another Southern California guy.
Well, it's ironic because when I was an assistant at Pepperdine, my early years, I wasn't allowed to recruit mm-hmm. off campus, mm-hmm. but I had the list and I would do the mailings and some of those things and would often run across Joaquin's name. Mm-hmm. And again, never seen him play and didn't know much about him. So we tried to recruit him. Obviously, we didn't get him. We had some other guys that probably made him hesitant to want to come because they were older, Jeff Lear and Dana Jones. that played the same position, but had a chance to coach against him. And he was a good player. And I mean, he was tough. He could score. He was athletic. So that's where I first met him. And then Coach Walker, our associate head coach, was an assistant there. So that's where I got to know both of those guys. And just over the years, as Coach Jones got into coaching, you see each other out on the road and you become closer and closer and closer. So that was the bridge that allowed me to come here. I actually had a position available, and the timing was right after I got let go at Pepperdine. And he reached out to me. Actually, I was going to reach out to him as I heard that there was a change or there was an opening. Mm-hmm. And it was great that he reached out to me, and we ended up meeting down in San Diego and talking, and made it happen.
You know, I think your staff that you're on right now with UY King, Keith is obviously into this as well. You guys stay in pretty good shape. And I don't know if there's a competition you guys have in the weight room. Y King probably wins the bench press. I think that's what he does. But you guys are a pretty imposing group there on that sideline with the physiques. You guys stay in shape. Is it a conscious effort on your part, or is it something that just happens?
No, it's something that we take pride in. I'm a big believer. You practice what you preach. We talk to our guys about being in shape and being fit and eating healthy. And I mean, all the different things on and off the floor, being on time. And if we're not doing it, but we're saying it, it doesn't match. If we're telling them be in shape and I'm fat and sloppy and all of that stuff, or be in shape, when they're looking at me, well, what about you? So I take pride in that, and I think our staff does. Early on in the summer and fall, we had some competitions. Okay. Where we would go as a staff and work out, and we would get on the climbers and challenge each other. And it got really, really competitive. And then my knee started to flare up, and I backed out
of
that
part.
Yeah.
Age wins all the time.
Yeah. And, but it was great, but we still, it's not as consistent now. Yeah. Just because of the grind of scouting and recruiting in the season. But we still try to get in there and get a workout. And a big part of it is just as you get older, just taking care of your body, kind of getting rid of some of the stress that comes along with the season. But we still try to do that. We encourage each other. We would send out videos every once in a while. Hey, who's going to get it in today? So we'll typically get two or three guys in there, the least, to try to get in a workout almost every day.
Yeah, we see you guys, sweating, before or after a practice because you've gotten your work done. Good for you guys. I wish I had this as much drive and motivation as you guys have, but it's pretty good to see. All right, let's talk about this week. You've got one game, Stanford. You got a long time to prepare for it, so you do some different things when you have just the one game. Tell us a little bit of what practice is going to be like for the players this week.
Well, it's different. We have a young team, as you know, and we're still trying to develop leaders. So we were off the staff was off. We're out recruiting. I just got back today. Coach Walker just left today. Coach Jones and Coach Grace are out yesterday and today. So the players were running the practices, and it's more of a shooting practice. So Coach Jones put together a plan for them to go through a number of shooting workouts that the players will run. We have our support staff, Coach Jones, Coach Oaks, Coach Jackson, all those guys in there running the clock and running the horn. But the players have to articulate what the drill is and what's next and who break up the teams and all that stuff, because that's something that we don't have, a true leader that commands the respect of everyone else, a true voice when the coaches aren't having to make them be the voices. So we're still trying to develop that. And I just got out of watching it. I didn't say one word the whole time I was in there, just to see the dynamics of who's going to step forward and be the leader. So Monday and Tuesday, yesterday and today, that was the plan. We're off tomorrow, and then we'll start prep Thursday, Friday, Saturday for a game Sunday against Stanford.
Do you have the scout for Stanford? Who's got the scout? David?
No, Coach Walker does.
Coach Walker does. Okay, so, but you have seen Stanford on tape or watching TV and games. What's your impressions of them?
Well, I had the Utah scout, and obviously they played Utah right before. And watching that game, very impressed with them defensively, how long, how athletic they are. And they cause a lot of problems early on for Utah. So that's something that we're going to dissect for us offensively to make sure we have a plan of attack against them. Again, I haven't watched a whole lot. We'll start watching a lot more other than the lead scout being right. Coach Walker. So I'll watch a little bit more just so I can get a feel for what we need to do defensively and have some ideas that way as well.
Yeah, and Ken, that game will be Sunday. We'll be on the air at 12:30 with a pregame show, The Tap, at 1. Come out to the game and then hustle home at 3:30 and watch the Rams against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You know, coaches, I mean, you've been in this a long time, so you've been in a lot of wins and there's a lot of losses. It's just the nature of the game. So how do coaches handle what's transpired this year as opposed to how players handle something like what we've been going through this year?
You know what? I think probably the same in some aspects. We touched on it the other day. Coach Jones touched on it the other day of when you're in a rut, you're just human. So you're going to deal with certain things that bother you. But as coaches, our job is try to get past the immediate right now and look forward to what we need to do to build, to motivate, to inspire the guys to hopefully get out of their rut and keep them motivated and going forward. So, and I think our staff does a great job of that. Again, we're really young. We find different ways to motivate, different visuals, different motivational quotes and different things like that to inspire them, to get them thinking outside of the now. And hopefully giving them a vision of what's next. And that's been our biggest challenge. But like I said, I think we do a great job of that. Again, young guys playing at this level, it's a challenge because you were the best guy in high school. It was easy in high school. You didn't have to work as hard. You weren't taught as much in high school, and now you have to dissect all of the things that are thrown at you. But as coaches, you deal with it a little bit, but we always talk about the 24-hour rule. After you lose, you got 24 hours. You have to start thinking about the next opponent, next game, and we try to stick to that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll be the case this week as the Stanford's the one lone game, so a long week to prepare and think about it and get ready for the Battle of the Bay between Stanford and the Bears. Again, we'll be on the air with a broadcast beginning at 12:30, Tap at 1 o'clock, Bears and Stanford at Haas Pavilion. Next week, we'll be on the road to face the Oregon schools in a completely opposite type of a week where there'll be two games, but there'll be 3 days between the games. So every week is a little bit different in the Pac-12 conference and presents different challenges. Hey, Marty, appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Good luck this week against the Cardinal, and continue to hit the weights, the treadmill, and stay healthy.
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Kiana Smith, one of the guards in the Cal basketball team that is coming off a victory over Colorado last weekend in Boulder and now faces three of the top teams in the country over the next 2 weeks, the top three teams in the standings in the conference. So it's a great opportunity for the Bears to make a splash, starting with Stanford here at Haas Pavilion on Thursday night, and then Stanford again on Saturday. We're used to having the women play on Sunday. This week it's Saturday against Stanford across the bay at 4 o'clock. So, Kiana, first of all, to just talk about the rivalry with Stanford. You got involved last year, had a good game here at Haas, 16 points when the Bears beat the Cardinal. Tell us a little bit about this rivalry from your perspective.
You know, it just has great history, and I'm just happy to be a part of it. Last year it was amazing that we got to beat them on our home court on senior night for our seniors. So we're just looking to do that again this year.
Trying to win back-to-back games against Stanford. Now it's over the course of 2 years for the first time since the 1980s. So you had a chance to make a little history this week.
Yeah, we do. We're looking forward to it.
All right. They've got a Kiana Williams, and then they also have an Alana Smith. So they kind of you kind of morph the names together there. One is their leading scorer, Alana Smith, and then Kiana for them is their leader in assists. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the matchup with those two.
Yeah, I mean, they're great players. I played with Kiana in the McDonald's All-American game in high school, so we become friends over these past couple years. They're great players, and we're just excited for the challenge to be able to stop them.
Yeah, it's always a great game, always a really good crowd as well, so it's an exciting atmosphere, but not as big as the crowd probably that we saw against Connecticut. What was that like playing in front of that crowd?
Yeah, that was amazing. To have a sold-out crowd in Haas, it was just insane, but yeah, we're looking forward to hopefully filling it up like that again Thursday.
It's been like that in some of the games in this series, so hopefully it'll be that way again on Thursday night beginning at 8 o'clock. All right, let's talk about the season to date. You guys got off to a blazing start, then played Connecticut, played them well, played them tough, 10-point game. The Harvard loss was tough. Then you began a series of games in the conference where literally every game is coming down to like the last 1 minute of the game. What's that been like so far?
It's been a challenge for us. I mean, I think we took it as a learning experience. I feel like we're better at finishing games and just not putting ourselves in that situation anymore. We just learned from it and hopefully to take that forward into the NCAA tournament and every other game that we have.
A lot of games left, obviously, as we're hitting the halfway mark this week in conference play. And then, of course, the conference tournament, which will be in Las Vegas this year, the week before the men's tournament. So that's kind of exciting as well, right?
Yeah, it's really exciting. With my family in Southern California, it's a lot easier for them to get to Las Vegas than in Seattle. So I know they're excited about it.
They can drive. They don't have to get on a plane, that's for sure. Just take the ride up I-15. Let's talk about the game against Colorado. Mm-hmm. I mean, for whatever the reason, at altitude, but you guys were red hot from downtown, especially in the first half. You hit 4 out of 5 that you took. Asia hit 3 out of 3. Mm-hmm. The team was 11 out of 14. What was it that was going so well? Why everybody got on the three-point train in that game?
Yeah, I think we were due for a good game. You know, I mean, we have great shooters on our team, and it was just a matter of time that we all hit it on the same night, you know. And then in the first half, we hit a lot of threes, and then the second half, so our post dominated inside. Mm-hmm. So it's just a great balance that we had that game, and hopefully it carries over into the other games this week. And
yeah, that's what it's going to take. Everybody's going to have to be on board for these next four games because you have Stanford this week twice, and then you've got the Oregon schools. They've been, you know, powers in this conference the last couple of years as well. You play them only once in the regular season, but fortunately it's here at Haas.
Yeah, that we're very thankful for that. It's nice to have our home crowd when we play these big games like that, so we're excited.
Well, everybody else is excited as well. All right, let's talk about growing up in Southern California. As you mentioned, your dad is currently the associate head coach at Cal State Fullerton. But you guys lived in Moreno Valley. Mm-hmm. And so you're going west during rush hour traffic.
Yeah.
Well, we talked to Roman Davis last week. He was going from Carson to kind of West L.A. near UCLA. And you guys you're out in the east area, Moreno Valley, and you had to drive to Cal State Fullerton. What was that like commuting every day? Because that's where you went to high school, right across the street from Cal State Fullerton.
It was tough. Me and my dad would switch off, so he would drive there, I would drive home. But it just ended up being a great bonding experience for us. We had a lot of like good talks on the way and listening to music or whatever it may be. I feel bad that he doesn't have a carpool now.
But that's right, he can't get that extra lane,
right? But it was fine. Yeah.
So who got control of the music? I mean, is it the driver that selects the music or is it the passenger?
Most of the time it was me. My dad has a soft spot for me, so
he deferred to you.
Yeah. But we genuinely listen to this, like he's pretty hip to our music and
well, it kind of has to be because he has to recruit young men of your age as well. So if he's not hip, he's out in left field by himself, right?
Exactly.
Dads have soft spots for their daughters. That's how it goes. So what the daughters do, kind of, you get a little bit longer leash,
no,
I think.
For sure.
So your brother also Jamal plays at Cal State Fullerton. Tell us about what it was like growing up with someone of your age, in the backyard or, out on the driveway playing 101.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been fun to have my siblings play basketball, and and my cousins and pretty much everyone in my family, we just play basketball every day. I've always looked up to my brother, and going to the gym with him, being the only girl with all my brothers in the gym, it's always been fun.
Was there any other sport that you were interested in growing up before basketball became the primary sport for you?
Yeah, I played volleyball for a long time and took it pretty seriously. I played all the way up until sophomore year in high school and like kind of had to make a decision between the two, and I chose basketball.
Outside hitter?
Setter and right side.
You were a setter?
I was.
You're a pretty good-sized setter then.
Yeah, I was.
Play with anybody that's currently playing in the Pac-12 conference at all?
No.
Okay.
I didn't. But a lot of my high school teammates went to, like, UCR.
Okay.
Like, a lot of Big West schools, UC Irvine, so.
Did he push you or kind of let you kind of do what you wanted to do vis-a-vis selecting sports and what was going to be your primary?
Yeah, my dad has never put pressure on me to play basketball. He's always wanted me to do whatever I wanted to do, just be happy. But just being in the gym every single day, kind of just how it went.
Well, it can go the other way. You can get tired of it, or you can get the bug, which some of us got, fortunately, in high school. So that's good. All right, to talk about sharing the rock a little bit more this year. I mean, you were kind of the primary. Asia can play that, but now you've got three of you that can handle the rock, along with Caldwell. So tell us what it's been like in that regard.
Yeah, shifting to the three position has been a different adjustment, but I think it's great having three point guards on the floor. Whoever gets it can go, and it makes us play faster. And Rase has just been an amazing leader and an amazing addition to our team. So I'm just really thankful that she's here.
Yeah, we talked to her last week, and she is an amazing young woman. And you can just tell she has great poise, presence about her, and doing an internship with the Warriors. And you can tell that she's going to be successful in that regard. Now, we understand that in the next week or two, I mean, this is a nervous time for you. And I remember some of the guys going through this a couple of years ago, Sam Singer and Stephen Domingo. You've applied to the Hospital School of Business.
Yes.
And so you'll find out in a couple of weeks. Are you nervous about that?
Of course, I'm nervous. I mean, for my whole Cal experience, I've been putting in a lot of work to, like, put myself in the best position to be accepted. So now it's here. The time's here. So I'm really nervous. And it happens that the application comes out on a game day.
Oh.
So it looks like I'm not looking at it until after the game.
That was the case with Sam Singer and Steven as well. I can distinctly remember this. We were up in a sandwich shop in Seattle because the team was playing the Huskies that day, and we had just finished the shoot-around, go to a sandwich shop in downtown Seattle. The phone buzzes for these guys, and it's like, ooh, do we want to look or not?
Exactly.
And I mean, they looked right away, and they were both admitted.
Oh, that's
so, it was awesome. So hopefully history will repeat itself for you.
I'm praying to God because I'm really nervous.
More nervous than playing in a game?
Oh, definitely.
What is it about the business school that you're most interested in? What kind of attracted you to that?
I guess just my aspirations after basketball, just wanting to like work in maybe the marketing department of Nike or like a high like corporation, and just being around basketball and like morphing my two passions into something I love to do.
That's what it's all about, whatever your passion is, and hopefully you'll get the green light on that and celebrate after a win as well. Which game is it, by the way?
I think it's USC.
Oh, that could be double fun. I mean, for a Southern California gal like yourself,
for sure,
to beat the Trojans twice in the same year and to get accepted.
And I have a lot of family in town watching and friends, so hopefully it's a good week. Well, it'll be a good weekend regardless, but hopefully we get some more good news that weekend.
Yeah, it might be tough to sleep the night before, that's for sure. Hey, Kiana, we appreciate you stopping by. Good luck to you this week against Stanford. Home on Thursday night, 8 o'clock, on the road Saturday at 4 o'clock. Next week, hosting the Oregon schools. A big stretch for the Bears. You're playing well, averaging just under 10 points a game, 3 assists a game. So continued success. Good luck this week.
Thank you. Go Bears.
It's always got to be Go Bears. There you go. And good luck with the admission to the Haas Business School as well. Joining me now on Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, is Nancy McDaniel, longtime coach of the women's golf team here at Cal. Tremendous success over the years, 19 straight NCAA regionals. That's a pretty good accomplishment. That's not too bad. Had some great teams here and hope to have another great one this year as well. Good to see you, Nancy. First of all, let's just start with your team this year. You've had a fall season. So you got a little idea what you have, and the spring season is probably the one that gets the most attention. Give us your thoughts about what kind of a team to expect this year.
Oh, gosh. This year, our fall season got off to a,
a good start in some ways with the Big Game Cup, mm-hmm. and had a great experience there with my senior being the last woman standing in a match that was both male and female against mm-hmm. some of the best, and partnered up with the best with Colin, and watching Cindy O nail a 25-footer downhill to win the match at sunset, when Conrad was the men's coach at Stanford was saying to me, okay, I think we should probably call it after this. And I'm saying, hey, Cindy still got a putt here. I think we got to figure this one out, you know. Wait till this really ends. And right then it went in, and we were really excited about that. They put on an awesome event there. And then we went to the Pac-12 preview, and the team really came out of their shell. And we'd had some things, you know, in the first part of the fall where just getting things together with emotions and things around the Spanish player who passed away at Iowa State. And mm-hmm. and so I think by November, things were up and rolling. And Maria Reyes, who's from Spain, really got going. We had five under par rounds at Pac-12. We were leading through and through, and ended up getting nipped in the last couple holes by the former NCAA champions, Arizona, by one shot only. And so we were really excited about that finish, and just the under par rounds and seeing people start to really putt well again. And so that was our fall. And looking into the spring, what was great about the fall was there weren't any injuries. And last year we were plagued by little knicky-knack things that kept people out of the lineup. And so this fall, or this spring, we're looking forward to a really healthy spring, and seven strong is our motto.
Okay. I love the idea that Hawaii is in the Pac-12 footprint. That's where you had the preview. I find that fascinating.
Well, yes, and the men's teams do too, I think, especially it being at Nanea, which is just a course. I tell the players, you know, you'll never have a chance to play this unless you know somebody who knows somebody. And and so we continue to go back to the Pac-12 mm-hmm. and talk about, oh, moving it maybe here or there, but no way. Why would we ever do that? And to be able to play, you know, 3-4 rounds there, and then to have it stretched out to 18 mm-hmm. this year was pretty remarkable. So.
Yeah, there's no reason to go over there and just play one round of golf, but that's for sure. You might as well get three rounds of golf in. So you open up in about a month, I guess, down in San Luis Obispo, the Bruin Wave, I guess they call it down there. So your first opportunity in the spring, and then after that, you got the Pac-12s eventually, Palos Verdes Estates. So obviously some great competition. How often do you play, and how do you determine on a weekly basis who tees it up?
How often do we play? Well, we play 20 hours a week because okay. that's our limit. But with the driving back and forth and all the things that these guys go through, it's probably about 28 hours. And they're out there right now at Claremont Country Club. And we play the area courses, Berkeley Country Club and Orinda and Sequoia, and, you know, courses at Ruby Hill that are nice enough to have us out. We're doing 8 rounds before we play, you know, as far as qualifying rounds coming up in the next 2-3 weeks. So we'll play usually 2 rounds during the week, and then 3 days of practice. And then they'll head out on the weekend and do what they like to or want to do. So, yeah, we're playing a lot, and we'll determine it by score. It's an easy one to coach, you know. It's not like who's putting well or, sometimes it comes down to something like that to make a hard decision in the end. But it really comes down to your score is on your forehead, unfortunately.
Yeah, they say in other sports the tape tells all. In your case, it's the scorecard that tells all, no question about that. Tell us about the composure and the makeup of your roster as far as youth, experience, California kids, etc.
Oh, wow. So our leader in the clubhouse is Cindy O. She's from Southern California, and she's one of the 3 seniors that's here. And then you have Marianne Lee and Amina Wolf rounding out the senior class. And then we've got 2 freshmen. Couldn't be more happy with our freshman class. Catherine Zeus from San Jose, and then Elena Aria is from Spain. And then in the middle of the pack, you have Sophia Lundell from Sweden. And then we have a couple. Who am I missing? Maria Arias from our junior from Spain. And so, I don't know, these three seniors are really great leaders for us. Marianne has been a captain. She's made it to nationals on her own as a freshman. And so I know she's got it in her to get the team back and take them on her back. She wants to do that. But I keep explaining to her that she's just got to hang out and understand her own game. And then, yeah, Catherine Zhu has been playing number two for us, and another California native. So we've got a couple of California, and then we go all over the world to look for our players. So,
how many scholarships can you offer? How do you disperse scholarships, et cetera? Because not all of the Olympic sports have scholarship one per one, so you have to make some decisions and, you know, kind of break up the pie a little bit.
Well, absolutely, you have to break up that pie. We're an equivalency sport, so we have six to break up, and I like to everyone to be on some sort of scholarship, and so we'll do that. We'll have make sure that everyone has a little bit piece of the pie. Obviously, you have your top recruits that you're going to need to, you know, give a little bit more to, and it all works out in the end, you know, and. Also, we're known for, you know, having somebody come on and then increasing them and, you know, letting them really earn something, earn it. Mm-hmm. I like that when our new AD came in and said that. I thought, yeah, that's what Cal's all about. And so these players are constantly working towards, you know, have something to work towards.
Yeah, give them a little incentive mm-hmm. as well. And we've seen this in some of the other sports. Football, they usually have in the fall, there's two or three guys that have been walk-ons for maybe 3-4 years. In the final year, maybe if they've performed well, and in some cases they've played and started, they finally get that reward. So it's nice to incentivize that for your players because there's always something more to work for. I always say about golf, nobody's ever been perfect. You can't play golf perfect. You can't play 18 holes and 18 shots. You just, not even miniature golf can you do that. Bowling, you can be perfect, but golf, you can't. So there's always something to work on. Talk about, and I think a lot of people are aware of this, but some people listening today are not, the last couple of years you've had some health issues that you've gone through. How has that either changed the way you coach or how you approach things? Has it made a change in your outlook as a coach?
Well, I certainly love what I do every single day. My perspective has changed, certainly. There's no way it can't after going through some things. And I think you just come back and you're grateful for what you have and the kind of players that we get to coach here at Cal, mm-hmm. the students and the athletes. And I tell you what, the views here are a little crisper and a little more colorful after, you know, after things where you just slow down a little and, you know, make every day count and just, you know, live like that. And hopefully it rubs off on some of the players if they're paying attention. They're awfully busy. But yeah, it's definitely changed me a lot. And I think there's a little more compassion for the players, but not in a soft sense of, you know, motherly or, hey, you're going to get special treatment or anything like that, but a little more looking at it from their perspective as well and trying to understand and having good conversations about things rather than, hey, we're going to do it this way and that's the way it's going to be. So, I've learned a lot from the experience and, you know, if anything could be good about it, it would be a change in perspective, sure.
And then you've also, during that period of time, you got inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know, the 49th person inducted into the Hall of Fame while you were going through this. And all the Pac-12 coaches came through and came to your support, including your former coach up at UW as well, to receive that kind of a love from your rivals and your competitors had to be something special too.
Oh, absolutely. I can't say enough about the Pac-12 coaches that we coach around. We just hired two male coaches at USC and Oregon, and they're great guys. But we had a band of women that were so strong, so competitive, but still would put their arm around you obvious times. And they presented me with a Pac-12 charm bracelet that is so special to me. And it just, you know, know, reminds me of the things that they were saying at that time, which were, hey, you know, there's not a stronger person that can get through this, and really paving the way for me at that time. And of course, you know, to be inducted into that Hall of Fame amongst people like my former coach mm-hmm. or the UCLA coach, Carrie, who's won a number of championships, was completely humbling and such a wonderful, touching experience, especially at that time. Yeah. So, things happen at weird times, and it all converged, but I look back on it with really fond memories.
Also, October, I believe, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you've done some things along in conjunction with some other people to make people more aware of this disease. I know certainly it affected my family. My mom had it and passed away. I had a sister. And part of it was, for probably both of them, and the end result was early detection. And so it's important to be aware of, you know, yearly or twice a year to make sure you go in and take care of the business, because the early detection is so very important as far as this disease is concerned.
Absolutely, yes. And all of those things played into where I sit today, mm-hmm. you know. And the big thing, our Teach for the Cure in October, that my husband and I, and then my assistant Bev and another player from University of California, Davis, helped out with, was just, you know, a thought of giving back. When you're affected by something, obviously you just want to pave the way for the next group and hopefully find a cure. And so, you know, we put on this, and that we'll do this yearly. And my dream is that many more of the programs that we talk to will do this with us. And I think this year we have about 20 that are interested, and I'm hoping to get 100 in the next 5 years. And we teach from 8 to 2, and we, you know, then have them donate to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and we want to help those, you know, help and to keep people on the therapies that I get to be on to lengthen my life, and then, you know, the ones that didn't get to, you know, weren't so lucky in the last 10, 20 years, we're honoring them by doing this. And then, of course, I have a daughter who's 19, and, you know, want to watch out for her and all of her her friends, and, you know, make sure we can put our best effort into research and getting a cure for this. So it affects so many people. But I've been touched by how many people have, like yourself, just saying that your mom and your sister were affected by it. That's part of it. And just getting people together, linked up to support one another on something like this. So it's our thing. It's what I, you know, it's my big, big thing, where I always tell the players, you're playing for something bigger than yourself. You're playing for Cal. And then I get to now try for something even bigger than Cal. But with Cal by my side, it's really helping to get the word out, and it's been wonderful that way.
It certainly has. It's been you've been a real inspiration to a lot of people. All right, your husband Jay is a golfer. He's the club pro out there at the Claremont. So, you know, over the years when you guys tee it up together, you guys competitors, somebody's got to give somebody strokes, different tees. I mean, how does that work when you guys hit the tee box together?
Well, usually it's not on the same tee box, and we usually have a good argument about how many strokes I'm going to get, and the fact that I'm hitting still from different tee boxes. I'm still hitting 5-iron when he's hitting an 8-iron, so that's a problem. But I will say we have a good match. Okay. Because I get my strokes nowadays. Back in the day, we had a good match without strokes, but he's been keeping his game up really good, and he's in great shape. So we'll see. I think I'll make another run at it and see if I can get him. But no, it's a nice friendly rivalry, and you get the kids involved, and by the end of it, everyone wants to kill each other, and off you go to dinner.
Where did Jay go to school? Did he go to UW?
No, Jay went to Central University of Iowa, and he played baseball, actually, a small D3 school in Iowa.
Oh, and then how did he get the golf bug?
He drove right after graduation straight to Pebble Beach to get his first job in golf, and it's been golf ever since for him. So,
how do you go from Pebble Beach to anywhere else? I mean, I know Claremont's awesome, but Pebble Beach. So his first job was as a what at Pebble Beach?
Oh, he was an assistant pro, probably second or third assistant at Spanish Bay. I met him at Del Monte. He was the assistant pro, and I was coming through playing a mini tour event, of course, and he asked me out on the putting green, and that was it.
Your first date was on the putting green. That is awesome. Yeah. That's great. Well, you guys have meant so much to golf in the area, and certainly what you've done here for women's golf at Cal has been nothing short of spectacular. Good to talk to you again, and hope you guys have a great season this year and get back not only to the regionals but make the NCAA tournament as well.
Yeah, thank you, and we're planning on it, so go Bears.
All right. Nancy McDaniel, the women's golf coach here at California. Well, that wraps it up for this week. We appreciate Marty Wilson talking hoops and his days in Southern California growing up watching the Lakers and how the Bears can turn things around this year. And, of course, to Kiana Smith, big weekend for the women's basketball team. Stanford at home on Thursday night beginning at 8 o'clock and then Saturday afternoon at 4. So a rare Thursday-Saturday for women's basketball. And then the men culminate the week off with the big game against Stanford Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast will be there at Haas Pavilion at 1 o'clock as the Bears take on the Stanford Cardinal. Thanks to all of our guests, and thanks to you for listening this week. As always, I'm Todd McKim, and go Bears!
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.